What should we do now?
Reacher said, I'm going to head over to the Duncan houses. They're all in there sitting around, thinking everything is going just fine. It's time they found out it isn't. Dorothy Coe said,
I want to come with you.
Reacher said, not a good idea.
I need to.
Could be dangerous.
I hope it is. Some things are worth dying for.
The doctor's wife said,
We're coming too. Both of us.
Let's go, right now. Chapter 57. Dorothy Coe got behind the wheel of her truck again, and the doctor and his wife slid in beside her. Reacher rode in the load bed with the captured rifle, holding tight over the tractor ruts, a long, slow mile back to where he had left the white Tahoe he had taken from the football player who had broken his nose. It was still there, parked and untouched. Reacher got in and drove it, and the other three followed behind. They went south on the two-lane and then coasted and stopped half a mile shy of the Duncan compound. The view from there was good. Reacher unscrewed the Leica scope from the rifle and used it like a miniature telescope. All three houses were clearly visible. There were five parked vehicles, three old pickup trucks, plus Seth Duncan's black Cadillac and Eleanor Duncan's red Mazda. All of them were standing in a neat line on the dirt to the left of the southernmost house, which was Jacob's. All of them were cold and inert and dewed over like they had been parked for a long time, which meant the Duncans were holed up and isolated, which was pretty much the way Reacher wanted it. He climbed out of the Tahoe and walked back to meet the others. He took the sword off from his pocket and handed it to Dorothy Coe. He said, You all head back and get car keys from the football players. Then bring me two more vehicles. Choose the ones with the most gas in the tank. Get back here as fast as you can. Dorothy Coe backed up a yard and turned across the width of the road and took off north. Reacher got back in the Tahoe and waited. Three isolated houses. Winter time. Flat land all around, nowhere to hide. A classic tactical problem. Standard infantry doctrine would be to sit back and call in an artillery strike or a bombing run. The guerrilla approach would be to split up and attack with rocket-propelled grenades from four sides simultaneously, with the main assault from the north, where there were fewest facing windows. But Reacher had no forces to divide and no grenades or artillery or air support. He was on his own, with a middle-aged alcoholic man and two middle-aged women, one of whom was in shock. Together they were equipped with a bolt-action rifle with two rounds in it, and a Glock 9mm pistol with 16 rounds, and a sawed-off 12-gauge shotgun with three rounds, and a switchblade and an adjustable wrench, and two screwdrivers, and a book of matches. Not exactly overwhelming force. But time was on their side. They had all day, and the terrain was on their side. They had 40,000 unobstructed acres, and the Duncan's fence was on their side. The fence, built a quarter of a century before as an alibi, still strong and sturdy. The law of unintended consequences. The fence was about to come right back and bite the Duncans in the ass. Reacher put the Leica to his eye again. Nothing was happening in the compound. It was still and quiet. Nothing was moving except smoke coming from the chimneys on the first house and the last. The smoke was curling south. A breeze, not a wind, but the air was definitely in motion. Reacher waited. 15 minutes later, Reacher checked the Tahoe's mirror and saw a little convoy heading straight for him. First in line was Dorothy Coe's truck, and then came the gold Yukon Reacher had taken from the kid called John. It had the doctor at the wheel. Last in line was the doctor's wife. driving the black pickup the first Cornhusker of the morning had arrived in. They all slowed and parked nose to tail behind the Tahoe. They all looked left, away from the Duncan compound, studiously averting their eyes. Old habits. Reacher climbed out of the Tahoe, and the other three gathered around, and he told them what they had to do. He told Dorothy Coe to keep the sod off, and he gave the Leica scope to the doctor's wife, and he took her scarf and her cell phone in exchange. As soon as they understood their roles, he waved them away. They climbed into Dorothy Coe's truck and headed south. Reacher was left alone on the shoulder of the Tulane, with the white Tahoe and the gold Yukon and the black pickup, with the keys for all of them in his pocket. He counted to 10, and then he got to work. The black pickup truck was the longest of the three vehicles, by about a foot, so Reacher decided to use it second. The white Tahoe had the most gas in it, so Reacher decided to use it first, which left John's gold Yukon to use third, which Reacher was happy about, because he knew it drove okay. He walked back and forth along the line and started all three vehicles and left them running. Then he started leapfrogging them forward, moving them closer to the mouth of the Duncan driveway 100 yards at a time, getting them in the right order, hoping to delay detection for as long as possible. Without the scope, his view of the compound was much less detailed, but it still looked quiet. He got the black pickup within 50 yards, and he left the gold Yukon waiting right behind it, and then he jogged back and got in the white Tahoe and drove it all the way forward. He turned it into the mouth of the driveway and lined it up straight and eased it to a stop. He slid out of the seat and crouched down and clamped the jaws of his adjustable wrench across the width of the gas pedal. He corrected the angle so that the stem of the wrench stuck up above the horizontal, and then he turned the knurled knob tight. He ducked back and hustled around the tailgate and opened the fuel filler door and took off the gas cap. He poked the end of the borrowed scarf down the filler neck with a longer screwdriver, and then he lit the free end of the scarf with his matches. Then he hustled back to the driver's door and leaned in and put the truck in gear. The engine's idle speed rolled it forward. He kept pace and put his finger on the button and powered the driver's seat forward. The cushion moved, slowly, an inch at a time, through its whole range, past the point where a person of average height would want it, on toward where a short person would want it, and then the front of the cushion touched the end of the wrench, and the engine note changed and the truck sped up a little. Reacher kept pace and kept his finger where it was, and the seat kept on moving and the truck kept on accelerating, and Reacher started running alongside. And then the seat arrived at the limit of its travel, and Reacher stepped away and let the truck go on without him. It was rolling at maybe 10 miles an hour. Maybe less, not very fast at all, but enough to overcome the wash of gravel under its tires. The ruts in the driveway were holding it reasonably straight. The scarf in the filler neck was burning pretty well. Reacher turned and jogged back to the road, to the black pickup, and he got in and drove it forward beyond the mouth of the driveway, and then he backed it up and in and parallel parked it across the width of the space, between the fences, sawing it back and forth until he had it at a perfect 90 degrees, with just a couple of feet of open space at either end. The white Tahoe was rolling steadily, already halfway to its target, jerking left and right in the ruts, trailing a bright plume of flame. Reacher pulled the black pickup's keys and jogged back to the road. He leaned on the blind side of the gold Yukon's hood and watched. The white Tahoe was well ablaze. It rolled on through its final 20 yards, dumbly, unflinchingly, and it hit the front of the center house and stopped dead. 2 tons, some momentum, but no kind of a major crash. The wood on the house split and splintered, and the front wall bowed inward a little, and glass fell out of a ground floor window, and that was all.